Welcome to Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane, here with your host, best-selling author and psychologist, Dr. James Dobson. And Doctor, today we have a guest with us whose name will be very familiar to many people listening.
Well, thank you, Luann. Joining us in the studio today is a woman whose life has been turned upside down. Mm-hmm. The vision that she had for her family, which would be the same that all of us would have for our children and our families, was distorted in a way that most of us can't even imagine. Yet she found hope in the midst of impossible circumstances. And we're talking about Carol Kent. Carol is the president of Speak Up Speaker Services, which is a Christian speakers bureau, and also the founder and director of Speak Up with Confidence Seminars. Carol and her husband, Gene, who is here in the studio, but he's got a gag on him, so he can't speak. They founded this nonprofit organization, Speak Up for Hope, which benefits inmates and their families. And we're going to hear more about that later. And Carol is on the front lines of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
She sure is, Doctor. She's the author of several books, three of which have really stemmed from the topic we'll be talking about today.
And we will discuss them individually. Carol and her husband, Gene, live in Florida. They have one son, Jason Paul Kent, and they call him JP. And Carol, welcome to Family Talk. It's just really a privilege to meet you because I've known about you and I've heard some of your speeches on tape. Tape that tells you how long I've been doing this, but it is really good to have you with us.
Dr. Dobson, it is an honor to be in the studio, and Luann, a joy to meet you as well.
I would like to get right to it. You've got so much to say, and I would like you to start with the early childhood of JP. And what kind of boy was he? Mm-hmm. And now he's a man. And describe some of the developmental stages that kind of led to your story.
Well, I got married to Gene Kent right after I graduated from college, and we didn't have two dimes to rub together, but we had love. We thought you could live on that.
I had one of the dimes, and we should have gotten
other.
Together.
We might have had a roof over our heads
that
then.
Was it.
But 5 years later, I gave birth to Jason Paul Kent, and he was a little boy who had a sparkle in his eye, and in one of his early pictures, he's in a sailor suit, and he did indeed grow up to be in the Navy, but those were happy days. He was a joy-filled child who really endeared himself to everyone he knew.
Did he know he wanted to be in the Navy when he was young?
Not at that age, not quite yet. But as he grew a little older, he was in Little League, and we would go to those games, and we would sit in the bleachers and watch him strike once, strike twice, strike three times. And he would go back to the bench, and we tried to talk to him about the fact that it isn't whether or not you win the game that matters, but it's how you play the game that matters. And by the time he got into his high school years, he made his parents proud. He was president of the National Honor Society, and he had a heart to serve others.
Did he go to the Naval Academy?
He did go to the Naval Academy, but prior to getting there, between his sophomore and junior years of high school, he went off to Summit Ministries in Manitou Springs, Colorado.
Yeah, right here. We've talked about that many times.
And he came home with renewed spiritual vigor. He said, "Mom and Dad, I really believe that God wants me to serve in military and maybe even in political leadership. And I believe the best place I could get equipped to do that would be at the United States Naval Academy."
Now, this is not a fair question to a mother, but he was kind of a superstar, wasn't he?
Well,
I mean, honestly, I haven't met him, but from what I've read, he was a very special young man.
He was a special young man. Let me quote a man from my church who said, "You know that Jason Kent is the kind of young man all of us want our daughters to grow up and marry."
Yes, Sarah.
And he had a heart to serve the Lord. He applied to all three academies and received an early invitation to become a cadet at West Point. But Jason wanted to hold out for Annapolis. And he finally received the appointment. And we were there in May of 1997 when on national television, all of those midshipmen tossed their hats in the air and we celebrated our young son's accomplishments.
Oh, my. Well, then you got a phone call from him telling you he had some new plans.
Yes. Well, he went off to nuclear engineering school in Orlando, Florida, joined a great church with a large young adult ministry and joined Bible studies. And there were women in those Bible studies. Uh-huh. And by the end of that summer, I was speaking at an arena event in Denver, and we called home for messages. And on voicemail, Jason said, "Mom and Dad, some things are coming down. We have to talk." And it's at a moment like that you wish your child would add two or three more sentences about what indeed
is coming
down.
Yeah, well, we could guess,
down.
I think.
Well, we got a hold of him later, and he said, "My orders have changed. I have to be at Surface Warfare Officer School in Newport, Rhode Island on September 8th. April and I are in love, one of the girls he met at Bible study, and we want to get married next Friday so we can go together." Now, not only was our son asking to marry a woman we had never met, he was asking to marry a previously married woman who had two children next Friday. And I must be frank and tell you, that was not on my agenda for my son's life.
Did you gasp when you were told, or did you hide it?
I'm telling you, I couldn't even speak. And I was so happy we were in a hotel that had two telephones, because Gene, my husband, and I have very different personalities. I have occasional highs, occasional lows, and Gene is just steady. He's very steady. And he kept that conversation going while I had a little dialogue with God. And I just remember saying, "Lord, you remember all those prayers I've sent up for my son's future spouse. This was not what I had in mind." Mm-hmm. And Dr. Dobson, I got back on that phone and I realized my boy was in love. He was getting married, and Gene and I instantly realized we had a choice. We could either choose to get on board, or we could cause a rift that just might last a lifetime. We encouraged them to wait 3 weeks to be married in our then hometown of Port Huron, Michigan, with the accountability of family and friends around them, and they agreed. And a week and a half later, April came into our lives.
You did the right thing. I've counseled a lot of families in that situation, and honestly, it's not your choice, but you can give your advice if it's wanted, and you can share the insights you have. But ultimately, the younger generation gets what you had when you decided to marry Gene, right?
Did you have to bring that up? Definitely. Well, I'll never forget. I watched Jason and April walk into our front door with their arms encircled around each other's waist. And it did not take me long to love April.
That was the first you met her.
It was. Yeah. And Luann, she had been married at the age of 16 to a man 10 years her senior. She had been through more tough stuff, hard things in life than anyone should ever experience. Mm-hmm. And behind the two of them in came 6-year-old Chelsea and 3-year-old Hannah. Mm. And within a half hour, little Chelsea came rushing up to me, grabbed my hand in her two hands, and she said, "You're my new favorite Grammy."
Oh,
well, that was working. And little Hannah would sit at our kitchen counter every morning, and in between her bites of cereal, she would sing songs about how much she loved Jesus. Mm-hmm. Within a week and a half, we had a beautiful wedding on a picture-perfect day. Jason was in his navy whites. April was in a dress from a resale shop. And Chelsea and Hannah were the little attendants. And when you look at photographs of that wedding, it looks like it should end. And they lived happily ever after.
Not quite. Not quite.
Not quite.
I know a little bit about their story. And April had, you said, been through a lot. She'd been abused, hadn't she? By her first husband.
There were multiple allegations of abuse. And I emphasize that, Dr. Dobson, because we don't have a lot of hard, cold facts that we can point to, but we know that she had been through much, and it was very, very difficult.
And you had custody problems right from the beginning.
Well, it was visitation issues that became the real problem, because the biological father, who had multiple allegations of abuse against him, was trying to get unsupervised visitation, and it appeared that that was going to happen. Throughout the first year of their marriage, there were many phone calls, and I remember Jason in the past would have been talking about what he was doing with the Navy, his hopes and dreams for the future, his excitement about his family. And in retrospect, we began to see him getting very obsessively concerned with fear that if the biological father of the girls had unsupervised visitation, that harm would be done. And it was now a year into their marriage. And Jean and I had been in St. Louis for a weekend speaking engagement, flew back home on a Sunday, and it was the middle of the night. We were sound asleep, and the phone rang. I remember Jean picked up the receiver, and I looked at the clock, 12:35 a.m., and I saw a look of shock and horror come over my husband's face. And he pulled the phone away from his ear, and he said, "Carol, Jason has just been arrested for the murder of his wife's first husband. He's in the jail in Orlando." I had never been in shock before. Nausea came over me. I tried to get out of bed. My legs would not hold my weight. I remember crawling my way into the bathroom and eventually into my office. And I was sure this had to be a bad dream. Mm-hmm. But as hour followed hour, the facts of the case were confirmed. Our son had shot a gun in a public parking lot, and a man had died. And we began a journey we never could have imagined in this lifetime.
Oh, my, Carol. Was it premeditated? Did he deliberately seek to kill the man?
This is a very hard question, because Jason has an obsessive-compulsive personality. He was fresh from military training, and at that time he was living 6.5 hours away from Orlando because he was in the most intensive dive school the Navy has in Panama City. And so he had weapons in his vehicle, and a 6.5 hour drive is a long drive. But he would explain it to you today, and he would tell you that at the moment he had those weapons in the car and began that journey, it was as if he was on a military mission. He said, "I could not envision my little girls coming to me later saying, 'Daddy, why didn't you protect me?'" He said, I can't even begin to tell you how obsessed with fear I was. And it was a not guilty by reason of temporary insanity plea, which is not popular with jurors.
Take us through the trial. What was that like?
Well, the trial was long in coming. It took 2.5 years and 7 postponements. I remember during those first couple of weeks not being able to breathe. And then the enemy would come at us with lies. If you had been a better parent, this would not have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had been less busy, you could have fixed this problem before it happened. And I heard the enemy taunt and say, "If you had read your Bible more completely and if you had prayed more fervently, this would not have happened." And Jean said to me one day, "You know, Carol, I'm going to start reading the Bible over again, beginning in Genesis. I must have missed something." Mm-hmm. And he came rushing out to the room I was in. He said, "Carol, I'm in Genesis 28, and it's that passage where Jacob is in a dream, and there's a ladder, and there are angels going up and down on that ladder that goes from earth to heaven. And suddenly Jacob awakens more alert than he has ever been before, because he realizes there is so much more going on in the visible and in the invisible world than he's ever been aware of before." And then Jean read to me Genesis 28:16. "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." And we began to understand that when God seemed the most absent, he is indeed the most present.
Because of your speaking and your writing and the people that you deal with, Carol, I'm sure that you hear variations of this story often, where at the point that an individual most needs the Lord and needs to feel His love and His arms around you, you're at war with yourself and saying it's your fault. Then who would love you and would care for you?
Oh, I hear that so often, Dr. Dobson. And the enemy wants us to think it's our fault, because if we did better parenting, this would not have happened. And it's overwhelming at times. And I remember struggling with depression for the first time in my life. And my doorbell rang, and it was the florist. And he said, "Hello, lady, are you Carol Kent?" And I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Well, then, lady, I have a bouquet for you." And he handed me one dozen long-stemmed yellow roses, the most beautiful I had ever seen. And I wondered who had graced my day with this unexpected surprise. And I opened the card, and it was from two of my sisters. Mm-hmm. It said, "Dear Carol, you once gave us some decorating advice. You told us that yellow flowers will brighten any room. We thought you needed a little yellow in your life right now. Love, Bonnie, and Joy." I had never been so needy, but I had never felt so loved. And Jean left for Florida very quickly because April and the girls needed to be moved from Panama City so they could be closer to Jason in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And that left me at home pulling the last of the finances together for a gigantic criminal defense. It was overwhelming to us emotionally, spiritually, financially.
Were you able to see JP during that time?
Not yet, because we were in Michigan and
Jason
was in Florida.
How long did you go without being able to go in and talk to him?
Well, Jason saw his dad a couple of days later because Jean flew down immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was able to see him about a week later. But while I was sitting at my desk pulling this paperwork together, my phone rang. And it was a digitized call from a jail asking me if I would accept the charges from an inmate. Mm-hmm. And I said yes, and it was my boy. And he was sobbing. He said, "Mom, I've just been jumped by 10 inmates. They were kicking me and kicking me in the head." He said, "My two front teeth have been broken off. I have a cut in my ear." He said, "I'm really busted up." And then I heard him sob. And he said, "The men stole all my stuff except for my Bible." And then he choked back a sob. And he said, "But after the beating, the corrections officers took me to the Christian-based area of the jail." And he said, "Mom, those men were like Jesus to me. They prayed over me. They washed my wounds. They brought me items that I needed, personal hygiene items, and they loved me." He said, "They were just like Jesus, Mom." Mm. And then I heard the click of that call indicating my time was over and out, 15 minutes. And I heard this deep guttural wail come out of the depths of my being. And I remember sitting at my desk saying, "God, I cannot do this journey. I cannot watch my boy suffer like this. Please take me home to be with you. I cannot do this." And then the mama part of me kicked in. And I instantly knew our son needed his parents more than he had ever needed us before in his life. And I got on that plane the next day and I left for Florida. Well, Gene had already had his allowable 15-minute visit with Jason as a parent, so he was not allowed to come with me. And I remember waiting a long time, and I was sitting there when I heard a shuffle come down the hall. I knew there would be glass separating us, and there would be a corrections officer listening to everything that was said. And as he rounded the bend, he was in jailhouse blues. Now, keep in mind, I was used to seeing him in naval uniforms with medals. He had on ankle cuffs with a chain between his legs. He had on handcuffs with a waist chain attached. He was fresh from the beating, so he was covered with scabs, and both eyes were fully bloodshot. Then I saw those broken front teeth. And for several moments, a mom and her boy looked at each other, knowing life as we once knew it would never be the same. And finally, I could speak, and I said, "Jason, Paul, Kent, there is nothing you could ever do that would stop my unconditional love for you, son. your dad and I are here for you.
Even though you recognize the wrongness of what he had done.
Yes.
You didn't attempt to minimize that.
It was against the laws of God and man. No one could justify what Jason had done. I believe he had become totally obsessed with his fears for his girls. Mm-hmm. And he would tell you today, Dr. Dobson, that he began to make an idol out of his own ability as a military man to protect his girls rather than trusting God to protect them. And he says today, I was so wrong. But oh, how my mother heart longed to somehow help and comfort my boy.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. Carol and Jean here in the room with us, I cannot imagine what you went through. I mean, the way Shirley and I feel about our kids must be very similar to what you feel. And yet you couldn't collapse. You had to be strong. Mm. How in the world you did that? But the Lord must have walked with you through that era.
Dr. Dobson, there were people who came alongside us. They called themselves our stretcher bearers. And they began to send out monthly email updates on how people could pray for us. But in those early days, as the word started to spread, we were held up supernaturally by the prayers of God's people. There were days when I would say, breathe, do the next thing. I would read a scripture verse, and I would have to read it 10 times because there were so many tears in my eyes, I couldn't see the words on the page, or I couldn't hold the thought in my head because I was still in such shock. And I now understand what it's like to be held up by God's people when you cannot hold yourself up.
Oh, my. So touching. I have scriptures in front of me that will relate to your situation. And I'm sure some of them were precious to you during that time. Psalms 34:18 said, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." You are crushed in spirit.
I know what it's like to be flat out prostrate before God saying, help me, Jesus. Yeah. I can't pick myself up off the floor. Oh. And he is close to the brokenhearted.
Psalms 91:1-2 says, whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. And I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. I have a whole page of them here because I've been there and I haven't gone through what you did, but I've seen a lot of people who have experienced that kind of emotion, and we've had our down moments too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Carol, I'm so glad you guys came to be with us today, and we want to talk to you about where the story goes from here because this was just the beginning. And if you'll be with us again next time, Lou and I haven't allowed you to say a thing, but I'm going to let you start tomorrow, okay?
And I will do that, Doctor. Before we go today, Carol, there's someone listening right now who is exactly in that depth. You're past it and you've healed. Can you close out today by just speaking to that mom from your heart? Give her some encouragement right now.
I want to tell that mother and that dad to allow people to love you. I was so used to doing things myself. I'm a firstborn, obsessive, compulsive preacher's kid, firstborn of six, and I was used to fixing things. And I needed to allow people to show compassion and to receive it gratefully. And I want to tell them to press into the arms of Jesus, into the grace place, and just let him love you. And to not apologize for your tears. I still cry a lot. And I don't make any excuses for that. God created tears. And I find that sometimes when I am in the middle of despair, those tears are very healing as I'll pound into the chest of God, and then I can't resist leaning into his embrace. But know that you have to get through one day at a time, sometimes a minute at a time, and that there is hope. There is a future, and when you know Jesus, it makes all the difference because the final chapter is not written.
We want to hear more about that hope next time, because you're right. There are people listening to us right now, Luann, who desperately need a ray of hope. And let's give it to them tomorrow, shall we?
Let's do it.
Thank you, Doctor. And a good place to start would be to invite listeners to call us here at Family Talk. As you've been listening today, if you can't wait until tomorrow and you need someone to give you a word of encouragement today, give us a call, 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825. We would love to pray with you. Of course, you can visit us online at familytalk.org. Either way, when you contact us, ask for a complimentary CD of this broadcast, which will include Carol's return visit with us tomorrow as well. In the meantime, you can find out more about Carol Kent, the books she's written about the situation, including her latest one called Between a Rock and a Grace Place, at familytalk.org, or when you give us a call, that number one last time, 877-732-6825. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to return with us tomorrow as we hear one more time from Mrs. Carol Kent on Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.